Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 50. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shadika Vishadasmere Saruna Panga Vikshitai Swakartanam Ivaraja Satvajnam Shrashtri Malaka. Those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the desires of their own devotees as if by the mode of passion and goodness. So there's an image here that Lord Brahma is seeing of all the cowherd boys and calves manifesting these very beautiful bluish, or like the monsoon cloud forms with yellow silken dhotis and their forearms with the different symbols of Vishnu and the helmet and beautiful jewelry. And they're not just liberated souls, because one of the types of liberation is called Sarupya Mukti. You get the form of God. Isn't that an interesting type of liberation? And you know how that is service? When God walks in his entourage, he wants to be with beautiful people. Really? I read that. So your service is to be one of the beautiful people that walk as God walks around. You get a form. But it's a little different because it doesn't have the Srivatsa. There's some kind of golden yellow hair on the right side of God's chest. It doesn't have the Kastubha Mani, this beautiful jewel. We can imagine what that jewel looks like. So, this beautiful form is there, and Brahma sees the form, and he's kind of astounded. And God is manifesting his opulence within the he's manifesting his opulence, and one of the opulences of God is that he's surrounded by those who love him. And that actually is the highest opulence, actually. Because you can be the richest man in the world, but if you have no love, your life is miserable. And very often, very wealthy people, they feel that, because when you have a lot of money, then people tend to look at you for what they can get. And you have to face that very, very often. And when you actually face that, after a while, you don't know if anyone loves you, even when they do. So a lot of times, very, very wealthy people... I read a book, it's a great book. It's about the American class system. Just a little softer at the beginning, and then I'll forget that this translation. It's about the American class system. There's actually an American class system. People think they have no class system. But it describes, it's really interesting... If you want to go down a class, go bowling. you really want to lose a class, then paint the tire white and put potted plants in it and keep that in your front lawn. But it's described that of the six class systems, there's one class system that's called out of sight. They have just so much money. And, you know, their lawns are they don't really dress wealthy. They don't, you know, there's middle class, then there's nouveau rich, and then there's, because they don't want that reciprocation for the world. Inherently, they know if their wealth is demonstrated, then people will always have motive in relationship with them. And they don't know if they can experience love or not. So the highest thing is loving relationships. And God is the perfection of that. Krishna is the perfection of that. Because Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti, the very definition. How would you define Akila Rasamrita Murti?
The personification of all spiritual mellows.
The personification of all spiritual mellows. The personification of friendship. Our God is the personification of conjugal love, friendship, of parental feelings, servitude, all. This is the fullness. This is what the whole story is. The whole story is that when God is at his highest, he's the, what's that? The
personification of all.
The personification of all.
He's the personification of all love at his perfection. It's not like less. And when you're the personification of all love, because that means intimacy, you can't take a position of majesty and opulence. Because when you take a position of majesty and opulence, you can't be intimate. You have to cover your intimate side. So really, the fullest position. So here we see God is surrounded by those who love him and who are expressing that love in kirtan. Because the main expression of love is to glorify and appreciate and bring that out of your heart. So here, each one of those forms, each one of the millions of cowherd boys has this Vishnu form, because Krishna is the master of all mystic potency. He has duplicated each individual person, not only physically but mentally, all their proclivities. And that is an amazing thing. Think of someone you're really close with. What would it be like to duplicate them? According to their whole psychology, past, proclivities, voice, actually the voice itself. And each one is surrounded by a party of devotees who have achieved the height of piety. And are doing the most beneficial activity, which is chanting. Chanting is the process to achieve perfection, and it is also the activity of perfection. To become pure, just like when Gauri Jambhu gave a commentary on the sages of Dhammacharanya, because they were there to perform sacrifice. And his commentary was, sacrifice is what makes one a sage. Sacrifice is the mark of a sage. So kirtan is what makes one a sage, and kirtan is the mark of a sage. When you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, the main symptom is that you talk about Krishna. It's the main symptom of what an advanced devotee is. Except when you're advanced, it's not a sadhana, it's a sadhya, it's not a practice, it's a perfection. It's not to get love, it's what's born out of love. What's born out of love is kirtan. When your heart is really filled with devotion, it will be expressed in kirtan. Like Narada Muni, traveling around the world, kirtan, Prabhupada, always doing kirtan, which also means to talk about Krishna. And that's how the Krishna conscious movement spread. In 1976, there was a Kumbh Mela, and all the senior Vaishnavas in ISKCON around the movement came to the Kumbh Mela where Prabhupada was. And then they came back to Vrindavan, and we greeted them with so much respect. So we greeted Kirtananda Swami. And he just, you know, New Vrindavan was kind of a new thing. So he said, well, how will you be, you know, how will you develop it? I'm not sure he exactly followed what he told us. Probably if he did, it would have been even better. Well, he said, well, just like Prabhupada. He sat down in Tompkins Square Park and began to chant Hare Krishna, and the whole Hare Krishna movement spread. So in the same way, we'll sit down in the hills of West Virginia and chant Hare Krishna. Actually, if you're ever in New York, I spend most of my time when I'm in America in New York City preaching. And you really feel it's a holy place. Because what Prabhupada wrote, I remember one time I was leaving, I got a quit India notice. You know, I was here on a student visa for like 15 years, they finally figured out that maybe something was wrong. And the quit India notice, Yamaraj might as well come and say, you know, you got 2 days left to live. And so I went to Prabhupada's room, and I was actually praying. He had the letters on his desk. So I'd see what the letters on the desk say. So I was praying. The letter on the desk said, it was to Bhavananda, that said, New York is favored by me. Because I started the movement there. I wish all New Yorkers to Krishna consciously advance. So we're staying in the Bhakti Center, 25 First Avenue. You walk around the corner, it's 26 Second Avenue. It's on the same block. How inspiring. And then if you want to take a Japa walk, in 10 minutes, you're in Tompkins Square Park. I remember when I hosted one of the Siddheshri, you know, I hosted her in New York. She's preaching in Iran. Wanted to help her get some inspiration so she should see where the movement began. And the most ecstatic part of her visit, is I took her to Tompkins Square Park and went by kirtan. And right in the middle of the park is this big oak tree. What?
Elm.
Big elm tree. He's a pandit. He knows his trees. This big elm tree. And when you And she looked up and she was shocked. Right, you know, up on the, kind of halfway up the tree, and it's a big old tree, is a sign the city put, the Hare Krishna tree. So, anyway, I got sidetracked. I forgot the point why I was making this. But
your host is her.
What?
Kirtanananda coming back from...
So Kirtanananda, yeah, he said, chanting Hare Krishna. It's what makes one a sage, and it's the mark of the sage. So these devotees are surrounding, and they're chanting. And Krishna is reciprocating with them. I remember one of the classes, there was a purport by Prabhupada, and there were three words that were just so meaningful and so powerful. And it's the essence of bhakti. He said, Krishna is responsive. That's what bhakti means. Bhakti means is that we're not only dependent on our own effort, but our effort is reciprocated in a loving relationship that allows us to advance beyond our own endeavor or effort. That's why bhakti is the path of grace. And even, I was very amazed that I did an in-depth study of the Yoga Sutras. Very close friend of mine for about almost 35 years is a very distinguished professor and a very humble Vaishnav. And I stay with him in Princeton. Well, used to be quite often, not as much now, I'm a little bit busier. And he gave me the transcript of his commentary, the Yoga Sutras, and he translated all the commentaries. Number two bestseller of spiritual books on Amazon.com on Eastern religion. And when I read the part about in the Yoga Sutras where it gives options for meditation, and one of the options is God, you can meditate on God with devotion. All six commentators talk about the path of grace. Talk about when you actually worship God, that's your object of meditation. It's so hard to achieve samadhi, to fix your mind without any. Samadhi is such a high state that you're so fixed in mind, you even lose the thought that there's anything outside your meditation. That's the difference between samadhi and dhyana. Dhyana, you're so fixed, but there's a conception in your mind there's something outside. In samadhi, you're just completely absorbed. Such a difficult state of meditation, and to hold it for long periods of time with no other conception, no other thought. But the commentators say, and then God says, by your devotion, let that which you desire be yours. Every commentator talks about grace. So there's this incredible reciprocation, which is the ultimate glory of God. The ultimate glory of God is that He's not alone. He's not amorphous, without any form. He doesn't have the defect of impersonality. So now, this scene where Vishnu is looking at them with his eyes, his reddish-tinted eyes, and he's smiling at them with his beautiful smile. Now read the purport. And this is, again, what's beautiful about this is that this is Prabhupada's ecstasy. Prabhupada's on... he's really on his back now. Because there's only about 10 more verses he'll ever translate in his life. So the The end is very, very significant in a person's life, because you tend to reveal more of your heart at the end of your life. That's described in the story of Putana. Internally, she was a witch. Externally, she was a very beautiful woman. But when Krishna sucked out her life there, she revealed herself. Of course, when you're dying, there's no use of spending any effort holding up all the pretensions that cover your real self. We spend so much effort covering our real selves. And sometimes we have to. Prabhupada had to, because we couldn't digest or understand who he was, even if he revealed it to us. And the ramifications of Prabhupada revealing his sarup to the world would be so misunderstood. But in the end, actually, Prabhupada did reveal his heart more than any other time. Because he was in his bed, and then all of a sudden, and I was there at that time, he said, "Take me to Vrindavan, to Govardhan. I want to go to Govardhan." Prabhupada really, his specific internal spiritual proclivities were very, very rarely so directly expressed. "I want to go to Govardhan." What is Govardhan? Govardhan is the highest place. It's the eternal residence, really, of our line of teachers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lives in his spiritual form in Govardhan. Radha Kund is part of Govardhan in Sukhata Swananda Kunj. So does Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati live in his sarup, his eternal form, his Nayana Manjari. And Raghunath, and externally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a house there. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had a house there. Raghunath Das Goswami lived there. Sanatan Goswami lived by Chakleshwar Mahadev, what's that called? By Manasi Ganga. Raghunath Das Goswami, probably, "I want to go to Govardhan." So very interesting. So these purports of Prabhupada are very, very beautiful, these last purports. "Those Vishnu forms bless the devotees with their clear glances and smiles, which resembled the increasingly full light of the moon. Shreya Kairayava Chandrikar Vitaranam." Prabhupada quotes from the Shikshastakam, the first verse. "As maintainers, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling." So it's so beautiful. That's love. Vishnu is the protector of his devotees. And the feeling of surrender, of full surrender of the devotees, the mood of full surrender of the devotees is, "You are my maintainer. You are the shelter. In my relationship with you, everything is there, including the satisfaction of my heart," which is the ultimate shelter, is love. In bhakti, in devotion, in service to you, then I am completely nourished, completely maintained in every way. That is the shelter. It's not just a house and a security system And Krishna gives you a bank account. He gives you eternal love. He gives you a perfect relationship in the heart. And he's smiling at all these devotees. He's smiling. Means there's no worry. And the devotees take such shelter in that. They're so happy. Independence. They're so happy because they have the proper shelter. Just like a little child in the arms of his mother. The child is satisfied. The child doesn't say, you know,
why are you the one that's carrying me? Let go. Get your hands off me. I want to free. You think you're so big. Who are you?
The child is just so the perfect shelter. And in one sense, we all hanker for the womb. That one comfortable position where there is no worries. And that's in relationship with God, fully. What? You don't hanker.
The womb has been described.
Can you give some descriptions of the womb?
Not in Sanskrit, but you know, biting by hot chilies.
That's only in an Indian family.
Cramped.
What?
Cramped.
Right. It's true. I stand corrected. The womb is not a nice place. Sometimes I speculate. I don't mind if I get caught. But you understand the kind of the feeling up there. Their smiles resemble the mode of goodness, protecting all the desires of the devotees, and the glancing of their eyes resemble the mode of passion. So the smiles is goodness, I'll maintain. And the eyes is passion, I'll create. Actually, in this verse, the word raja means not passion, but affection. In the material world, rajagun is passion. But in the spiritual world, it is affection. In the material world, affection is contaminated by rajagun and tamagun. But in the Sudha Sattva, the affection that maintains the devotees is transcendental. The word svakartanam refers to great desires. Now this is the part to listen that we discussed yesterday, and so beautiful. As mentioned in this verse, the glance of Lord Vishnu creates the desires of the devotees. A pure devotee, however, has no desires. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma jnabhritam anukulyena krishna anu shilam. Anya bilashita shunyam. No personal desires. I'll tell a little personal story. You know, in Krishna, about 20 or 30 years, I lived in Vrindavan. So, I wanted to study Jiva Dharma, this book. So I went to one sadhu. Right? So, no, I just wanted to study. So I went to this one sadhu I knew. Anyway, I did things that were not completely legal. So I went to one sadhu. I didn't even know what the book is. So I said, I want to study Jiva Dharma. So he looked at me and he said, oh, you want to understand Raganuga Bhakti? Anya bilashita shunyam. First become free of all your material desires. Anya bilashita shunyam. He said, oh, okay. He said, we can study it. I said, okay, what chapter? He said, 22, Raspachar. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glances create variegated desires in relationship to Krishna and his devotional service. So Krishna looks at you, inspires love in your heart, and then inspires you how to serve him. He puts a desire in the heart to serve him. And that's his mercy. And when we, if we want, it's a fact, if we want to know what Krishna wants to do, wants us to do, we have to be free from a personal agenda. I know sometimes I have choices to make, and I really can't decide what to do one way or another. And I intuitively know the reason why I can't decide is because I'm trying to calculate from the platform of false ego what I want. And when you calculate from the platform of false ego, which is what is best for my sense gratification, then what happens is a hair more pleasure becomes so much significant. Should I go on this plane on that day, or should I go on this day on that day, or this day on that day, and which has a hair of more sense gratification for me? That's called the mental plane. The mental plane is when you're calculating for yourself and it becomes torturous. So what I would do, I would go into Prabhupada Samadhi and go into my heart and really pray. I mean, the bigger decisions than just an airplane. And just pray, what do you want me to do? Take away my own personal desire. What do you want me to do? Of course, Krishna may also want us to be happy or satisfied in a particular way. So he may give us the decision. Well, what pleases you? What makes you happy? That's also maybe his desire, to keep us satisfied. But when you take away your own, the answer will come a lot more easier. That's what hinders Krishna's desire from manifesting. It's our own desire. Even when you read the Bhagavatam, it says that you really can't hear the message when you don't want to hear the message, because you have your own desires. And only when you really want to hear the message will you actually hear the message, which is surrender to Guru and Krishna. Now, I'm going to answer the question that Jamuna Pavani asked me at the end of the class yesterday. I said that at a particular time, there's two halves of life, which I was mentioning, and there's something called falling upwards. At a particular time, you know, you have like a vessel that's maintaining you even for spiritual life, and then somehow it becomes challenged. And I think what you meant to say is that in our life, to be healthy, we have to become satisfied on the material and psychological platform. We have attachments that need to be satisfied. And we spend a lot of the first part of our life satisfying that. It may be grihastha ashram, it may be having children, it may have the may get our career, it may have, you know, being a place and setting. There's so many attachments. I want to be a great singer, I want to be this, I want to be that. And I think what the point was is at a particular time, God may help us, you know, the satisfying of the attachments is not the goal of life, it's in a reasonable way. It's not just any attachments, we have needs that we have. It's not the goal in life, it's to make us peaceful to pursue the goal of life. And at particular times, those attachments itself at a particular level can be impediments to attaining the goal of life. So there's a kind of idea here that you're building this vessel to fill your life with spirit. And then we see that we face certain times in life where, you know, those attachments get challenged. And those are the tragedies we have. Whether it's the financial situation we developed in different people, different ways, or it's the relationship that we needed, or it's the reputation that we got to satisfy our self-esteem so that we can be peaceful and happy. And then at a particular time, those very things that we've cultivated for the purpose of realizing the truth are challenged for the purpose of realizing the truth. It's a very good book. It's called Falling Upwards. Very deep spiritual realizations. And he discussed actually how it's a major theme in most spiritual literatures. And even he went through the Odyssey and different books. God was a great scholar. Went through different books and to show that this kind of challenge is there. And we all have it. We all have it. And it's not talking about premature renunciation. It's talking about God dealing with us to actually give us something that's beyond anything external to ourself, which is our, and in one sense, that's one of the meanings of the Dandabhanganadi. You know, the very thing you may take for your spiritual life, which is sannyas, that upadhi or designation may have, it is broken. And actually, when we worship the deity, what is it called? Bhutashuddhi? One of the five things that we do is establish ourselves in a position that's beyond all our designations. Naham vipach and nara pati, right? Gita, you know that one?
Naham vipro nacha narapatir nati vaishya na shudro. Naham varani nacha brihapatir no vanastu yateva. Kintu prodhyan nikila paramananda puranam ratate. Gopi bhartu pada kamalayurata satasanita.
Translation?
Naham vip, I am not a Brahmin, neither am I a Kshatriya, nor a Vaishya, nor a Shudra. Nor am I a Brahmachari, nor a Grihastha, nor a Vanaprastha, nor a Sannyasi. But I am simply the servant of the provider of the gopis, who is full of Paramananda, all supreme joy.
Gopi Bhartu Parakamala Dasa Dasa Anadasa. Okay. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, we'll read this again, the Lord's sidelong glances create variegated desires in relation to Krishna devotional service. In the material world, desire is a product of Rajagun and Tamagun. But desire in the spiritual world gives rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. Thus the word svakartana refers to eagerness to serve Krishna. And that's what your level of advancement is judged by. Your service attitude. I told you, I get great joy from having good friendship with Pradyumna Prabhu, Prabhupada's Sanskrit Pandit, Prabhupada. When the Chaitanya Charitamrita came out on Radhastami, Prabhupada gave a lecture glorifying Panditji. He actually had translated all the commentaries and everything from Bhakti Siddhanta, etc. So I remember he gave me such a good definition of bhakti, and it was so simple. And see if you have this consciousness in your life. He said, bhakti means to make yourself available for service. Bhakti means to make yourself available. What you want, I will do. I'm ready. How difficult to actually put yourself on the altar of sacrifice and actually develop such a strong desire to serve that what Krishna wants becomes your desire. And that's really called the Bhakti Lata Beach. Ramanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan, Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. You're wandering from universe to universe, to species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get this Bhakti Lata Beach. The faith. It's a faith in the sublimity of service to Krishna. Real faith. That you actually think this is the greatest thing. Not what I want to do, but what Guru wants to do, which is ultimately what Krishna wants to do. So, describes the spiritual world. When we're fortunate, Krishna's glancing on us and creating our desires. And then when we embrace those desires with purity, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilana Bhakta Uttama, when we intend to please Krishna, then he maintains it. And now here's the beautiful part of the purport. In Vrindavan, there is a place where there was no temple. Prabhupada's on his back in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. But a devotee desired, let there be a temple and save a devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty lot has become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of the devotees. Prabhupada carried Krishna's desire in his heart for a temple in Vrindavan with Krishna Balaram deities. And Prabhupada said he established Krishna Balaram deities for two reasons. Because it's the most, it's rare. There's how many Krishna Balaram deities, temples are there in Vrindavan? And he said one is he wanted to show the world that Krishna Balaram is none different than Gaur Nitai. And for a spiritual movement, Balaram represents strength. So he wanted the movement to be anchored by the strength, the spiritual Balaram. Bala means strength, and Ram means devotion, pleasure. Strength to get the greatest pleasure. It takes strength to get the greatest pleasure, because the greatest pleasure is bhakti. And it begins with surrendering to Krishna. And in the last purport, I want to read something what Prabhupada said too, which is very intimate, which we didn't. And he's commenting on Buri Punya, the greatest piety. So the idea was is the devotees, punya arpita, that they were, let me just get the, it says, which were offered by devotees engaged in the greatest pious activity, worshipping the Supreme Lord, by hearing, chanting, and so on. So Prabhupada, it's offered by those who have the greatest piety. So devotion is something that's offered by people who have the greatest piety. So this is Prabhupada's commentary on this. In our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a tamal tree that covers an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was lying neglected, but now it has developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of Buni Punya. So let me read that again, and let's see if you put on your thinking hats and say why you think this is. Prabhupada said, what exactly is the sign of the greatest purity? Okay? I'm going to read this, and you have to analyze what is the sign in this of the greatest piety that Prabhupada's talking about. In our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a tamal tree that covers an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was lying neglected, but now it is developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of Buri Punya. What's the sign of Buri Punya? What?
Tamal's luxurious development. It's growth.
The growth.
The growth of the tamal.
Because, why? Because, this is what I'm thinking, because it was lying vacant and it became luxuriant because there was devotion and kirtan going on. And the result of it, this is the sign that things become luxuriant by devotion. Now, what I want to do, the class started, you know, much later than we usually do, but that's okay. We're now on the platform of spontaneous devotion, so, and we don't have breakfast today. So maybe if I go 5 minutes over, that will be okay, but we still have some time. So, what I want to do now is I want to practice Krishna consciousness, as Lord Chaitanya did. So what we want to do is we want to hear the pastimes of Krishna and to develop some bandha for the holy name. So first we'll have kirtan. And the first I'll speak, and then I'll have Arjuna lead a little kirtan. And we can end it there for today and then continue tomorrow. So let's meditate on the pastime. Krishna had just killed the Agasura demon. Horrible, a giant python demon. And now his friends have been saved by Krishna, so they have a mood of gratitude and love towards Krishna. And now they're late for lunch. And now they're continuing in their service of herding the calves. And then as they're going, Krishna sees an ideal spot. It's right by the bank of the Jamuna, and it has clean white sands, Raman Reti, and there is clear, crystal clear River Jamuna flowing. And it has beautiful lotuses whose fragrance is attracting the bees and the birds who are humming and singing. And there's beautiful shade trees to take lunch. And all these cowherd boys with their calves. They let the calves go to drink the clear water of the Jamuna. What a scene that is. Swakeli Sampat, that Vrindavan means it has all assets for the loving exchange of Krishna. And they drink the water, and then they tie the trees, they tie the calves to the trees, and then Krishna begins, and he sits and he begins to have a picnic. And in the middle of, it's like the whirl of a lotus, the middle of a lotus is Krishna, and his cowherd boys are just surrounding him, hoping that Krishna will look forward towards them in love. And then they open up their picnic baskets that was cooked by their mothers in the morning in Vrindavan. The mothers of all the cowherd boys who love Krishna actually more than their own sons. They're cooking knowing that their sons are going on picnic in the forest with Krishna, and that Krishna will be taking and sharing what they have. In the morning, all the mothers, they're cooking and they're singing the most beautiful songs, glorifying Krishna in the morning. There's always kirtan in Vrindavan. Wherever there's love, there has to be kirtan. And now the cowherd boys, they take out their baskets and they start to make plates. And some get a few rocks together and make a plate. Some get a bunch of leaves. Some get a piece of bark that's fallen off the trees. Other boys, who are more artistic, they pick flowers and they pile a whole bunch of flowers, and they can actually eat off of these beautiful flowers. And then Krishna and the friends, they start to eat, and they're sharing off of each other's plates. And there's so many delectable preparations that express the love of all the elderly gopis of Vrindavan. The finest fruits in the world, the really ripe, sweet papayas and Vrindavan chikus, and perfectly ripe, sweet bananas and grapes and all kinds of wonderful fruits and other preparations. And they're sharing off of each other's plates, and that saman bhagavatam, this equality of friendship. Krishna's revealing his friendship with his cowherd boys, and they're eating off of each other's plates. And they're joking with one another and laughing and having so much fun. And then the demigods, they just saw Krishna Kilagasa. Now they see him here and they're wondering, wait a second, I'm not sure who he is. Because how can he be God when he's just an ordinary boy? And they say to themselves, Yajnabhuk Bala Keli. Yajnabhuk. He's eating all the yajna? Is he Yajnabhuk? That supreme absolute that's eating the millions of gallons of ghee and bananas that are offered in the sacrifice and the prasad? Or is he Balakate? He's just playing like a boy. And look at him, he's just sitting there with his beautiful golden dhoti, and he has his flute tucked into his right side between his dhoti and his left side. He has some nice little cowherd boy stick and a bugle horn. And he's holding in his hand this preparation. And it's so delectable. It has the freshest yogurt made from these protected, loving cows in Vrindavan that's so rich. And with the finest rice, perfectly cooked, mixed with all these perfectly ripe and fruits whose fragrance, whose sight, whose touch, whose taste is just indicating how much the people love Krishna who've given this to him and picked this for him and prepared this for him. And he's holding it in his hand, and even the whey from the yogurt is dripping down. It's staining his dhoti, and they're seeing he's joking and playing, and he's just a young boy. And then the demigods begin to wonder, is Bala Keli, he's just playing, who is this? This can't be God. This can't be God, he's just an ordinary boy playing equally with others. God must be Aishwarya, God must have all power. He said, wait, let me give a little test here, let's test the rice. See if this is the fully cooked God. So, the cow, of course, by this time the calves had just wandered away into the forest. And the coward boys became so fearful. But Krishna, although he's the Supreme Lord and his will and determination is an absolute fact, he can do anything by his will, still he goes personally, because there's one thing you don't want to do by just your power and will. You may be the biggest man and have 1,000 people, but to serve your loved ones, you want to do that personally. So Krishna goes to the forest because the coward boys he's holding this fruit in his hand. And he goes in the bushes and he goes in the caves and he's looking behind here and he can't find them. And he's, what happened to all the calves? And then he goes back to see, maybe they return to the coward boys. And the cowherd boys, they're also gone. So Krishna, who is Vishvavit, Krishna, who knows everything, understands what's happening. And he understands that his devotee, Lord Brahma, has become a little filled with pride and thinks that he has power and that I have to purify him by showing that his great power is just relative to the power of the Supreme. So let me teach him a lesson. At the same time, while they're gone for 1 year or one moment of Lord Brahma's time, I can manifest into all the coward boys and calves and have all the residents of Vrindavan who love me more than their own life have me as their own son. And the cows who are so dear to me, I can become their calves for 1 year. And therefore I can personally exchange with them in love. So Krishna duplicates exactly the lunch bags, the dress, the particular speech. Imagine if Krishna had to recreate my British accent. And every, down to the T of everything, and their proclivities, and exactly, except they're Krishna. And then Krishna goes back home, and the cowherd mothers, who had actually loved Krishna more than their own sons, now love their sons as much as they love Krishna. And they come home, and the mothers are, they're bathing their sons, but it's Krishna. And then they're massaging them with oil and then putting on a sandalwood pulp to cool their bodies. It may have been the summer. And then they cook and feed them and they dress them so nicely in their ecstasy. And then the next day the cowherd men take out the cows. And they're on top of a hill, a mountain, grazing where there's some especially beautiful grass. And the cows, they've left their, they're with their little calves. They took the little newborns out with them today. And then the other calves that were older were down in the valley with the cowherd boys. And all of a sudden the cows leave their small calves and go to the grown-up calves and run down the mountain as if both their legs were one, with their tails and head in the high in the air and the hump on their back moving, and they're running down, and Balaram's watching this. What is going on? This doesn't make sense, because in Vatsalya Ras, the younger the child, the more the affection of the mother. Why is the cows leaving the smaller calves and going to the bigger calves? This doesn't make sense. And then the cowherd men become in complete anxiety because their cows have run down the mountain, so they kind of make their way difficult down the mountain. And when they see their children, who is actually Krishna, they just begin. And the calves, they look at the cows are practically swallowing the calves with their licking of their mouth in such ecstasy. And then the cowherd men are smelling the heads of their children and hugging their children. And then Balaram finally goes to Krishna and says, "What's up?" And then Krishna says, it's me. I manifested. And then after a moment, which is 1 year of our time, Lord Brahma comes back. There's three places in Braj. Giddinaga, you've been there? Choman? You and Shastra, we'll go. There's Say, Parakam, and Chauman. Chauman means where Brahma begged the forgiveness. Then Say is the place where they first saw, and then the other place where he came back and saw. There's three places and a little ashram there. And it's not far from the temple. It's really... We'll go there one day. I'll go there with you. One of the days. It's not very far, so... So... And then, now we're at the park where Lord Brahma comes back. And then he sees that the cowherd boys and calves are there. And then he goes back and they're still there. And he's going like, you know, which are the real ones and what's going on? He tried to exhibit his mystic power against Krishna. He was a beautiful glowworm in the dark. Now he was facing the son of Krishna. And Krishna, in his destiny to Brahma, is saying, "You're nothing." And Brahma's looking at the cowherd boys, and when he looks at them, then all of a sudden, they manifest bluish forms with yellow dhotis and beautiful anklets and the srivatsa and the kastuba and the jewels, and there's each form is surrounded by devotees doing kirtan, offering huge tulsi garlands that are fresh and green with manjaris, and they're doing kirtan. And tomorrow we'll finish the story. So Prahlad, we'll just do 10 minutes kirtan. Okay, come up. You can play the drum. And then after this, please stay, because we have announcements after this. I request you all to stay until after the kirtan. I will. One of you play. One of you play kirtan. What? Okay, you can think of the past time. Something sweet and unmind, complicated.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Yeah.
And get set what our program is today. I see. First, I'd like to thank, there's a god brother of mine named Prabhu Kripa. He's a scientist, and he sponsored the prasadam yesterday. And then there's one nice devotee in America named John Cherini. Very nice person. He'll sponsor lunch today. And of course, this program was initially inaugurated. It was the desire of Shastra Prabhu to take some devotees and sponsor them in the Dham. We started a little small, and then it kind of built up. We never really advertised the program extensively. We like to create that, to attract the people who really have that strong desire. It's a different type of preaching program. It's for me and others, Eden Agri and our friends and all the people that are joining, Gopal Jude publication. We really just like the Pancharatna and his wife, and to just get together and really just, you know, spread Krishna consciousness by a few of us, just really churning it very, very deeply in Krishna consciousness, and others gradually join. Shastra is a main donor. I also collect a little bit for the program. And we try to keep it by donation. We also, anything extra we use, we give out a few scholarships. Not everybody even could afford this. And we try to do it in the pure spirit of bhakti. You know, I mean, you pay for the rooms, and that's nice to the fathers and the place. You know, it's a business arrangement. But we like, for the rest of the festival, that you know, we give the facilities out of love, and people can contribute something out of love. Every year we get a different combination of people. There's not as many people from the West as usual who tend to give a little bit more. So we're still about 50,000 rupees or so short. Somehow we've always managed. If anyone even likes to give a little bit to help out more, and I know some people absolutely can't do it, or if you can give just something more, we'll somehow pull it all together. And Aditi will be at a table downstairs after this. And also, if you haven't paid for your rooms, we can make arrangements. So anybody else would like to help out, we can actually keep the nice tradition, and that's where we get the sound systems, and we always purchase new madungas, and we play the transportation of the kirtaniers wherever they are to come, and of those that are local, then, you know, we give them the free facilities. And of course, I don't even have to name them, but the whole crew from Gopal Jew Publications is such selfless service in the mood of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which means the life force, the character, the life force of the devotees in immortality, which is surrender and service. So we also like to thank all of them. And so if you can, we're going to congregate again in about, let's say, 10 o'clock. So that's, I think, 45 minutes. So if you guys can come here and start the kirtan, okay, at 10 o'clock. And of course, this evening, it's a great Acharya's appearance day. Really, because we're going to have lunch early, please try to come at time at 4 o'clock, because Madhavananda has a lot to say about a great Acharya, the Tattva Dvaita Acharya. So we'll have that in the evening. And today, we're not going to go out. We'll have a little program here. I've asked Gita Nagari to give a little presentation, maybe 45 minutes or something, on Nam Tattva. He's heading up the Harinam in Mayapur. And then after that, Charachandra is going to give. He's been studying the Bhagavatam intensely. He's writing the curriculum for Bhakti Vidyapurna. He's an academy on the Bhagavatam. He's also written the curriculum on the Bhagavatam for the MIHE. And I think he's working now on the Bhakti Vedanta. So there's Bhakti Shastra, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta. And he wants to speak about Lord Jagannath in the universal form. So he'll speak on that, and then we'll take lunch at 12:30. That also gives a little more time in the thing to rest up and come to the evening class really on time. So you can really hear some good tattva. I think Madhavananda should start on time and speak, and if anyone's not there, then they'll have to catch up. When they come back late, then that's one other thing. And just a few other announcements. If you want to take away Jagannath Prasad, please tell Sesha Prabhu. He's the very pious cook that cooks so delectably. He'll be there at lunchtime. You can find him. And you can order for him. Taxi leaving on 28th, 27th night. At 27th, 28th, or 29th can be arranged by writing on the whiteboard downstairs. Please give your name and flight and train details. Okay? So again, if you can help out, I got the accounts here, and we are a little bit short this year. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.